Okay, so welcome to our meditation group. We start off by setting the atmosphere, the ambience, by getting all this beautiful chanting going. So, we have the chanting sheets there for those who want to join in. If you don't know the words, just hum the tune. Okay, unfortunately we don't have any accompaniment here, so we just make it up as we go along. Are you ready? Are you really ready?
Yes.
Are you really, really, really ready?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You've got to give things everything you've got in meditation in life. So here we go. A one, a two, a one, two, three. Let's try that again.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Very good. Well, have you ever wondered why you get monks to the Armadale group and never get any nuns? Or very rarely? You know why? Look at the sheets. Whatever living beings there may be,
or meeting nuns. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none to anger or ill will. Yeah, so we every now and again we change that. Whatever living beings they may be, omitting monks.
Of course, come on, what do you expect? You know what to expect when I come here.
So anyway, parts of meditation, mindfulness is learning to relax to the max. And one great way of learning how to relax is learning how to smile. And there's so many stories about that. Even when I was in Thailand, first year in Thailand, that's 45 years ago. I'm really getting ancient now. And like most other people here, come on, admit it.
Admitting none.
Admitting none, yeah. So we used to go from monastery to monastery in these old pickup trucks, you know, the SUVs. Not the SUVs, what do they call them? Utes. Yeah. But anyway, the ute would have, you know, we're all just in the back. And we'd have this metal metal frame on the back over which there was a stretch of tarpaulin in case it rained. And had little benches we would sit on. And these were all dirt roads. And they were really badly maintained. So, whenever you were going along the road, every now and again, you'd hit a pothole. You couldn't miss the potholes because there were too many of them. And so when the ute went down, I went up. And you banged your head on these metal railings. Now, it may be okay for you, or not for some of you. You've got padding. Me, I just got bald head. So it really hurts. And of course, you know, being brought up in the West, what do you do when you hit your head? Avoid those potholes, you stupid driver, whatever it was. But the thing I noticed, when the Thai monks hit their head, they never swore. They laughed. I thought this was weird. How can you laugh when you crack your head against this hard metal? And so, being a scientist, I decided that to have a theory. My first theory to explain how you can laugh when you hit your head was that those Thai monks who had been in Thailand much longer than I had had probably hit their head so many times they were all brain damaged. But no, that couldn't be the case. So my second theory was to do an experiment. So I decided the next time that I hit my head, I was going to laugh on purpose. And I discovered amazing secret. If you hit your head and you laugh, it hurts much less. Do you believe me? If you don't, come up here. But that's an amazing thing, just to have a little smile on your face or a laugh when you do some meditation. Simple thing, but actually it works. So whatever I have to do in my life, it may be really tough, a lot of hard work, always make sure I make a laugh. So much so, but these days, I'm not quite sure about you, but do you do your exercises in the morning when you wake up? I always do my 10 push-ups in the morning when I wake up. Really, I do 10 push-ups. In front of the mirror, two fingers, one, two, three, four. Exercise my smiling muscles. Now you may think that I'm being just funny for funny's sake, but actually it does work. Because you look at yourself and you're very miserable because you had to go up in the morning. You've got a lot of things to do. You've got to sort of go to work and deal with your boss. You may be the boss and deal with the other people. Whatever it is, you do 10 push-ups in the morning and it just changes just the way you start your day. You give a little bit of happiness and joy to the day. So you don't take it so seriously. The problem with people today, they're way too tense. Too stressed out, which means they haven't got any resilience in today's world. Just like a guitar string. If you pull a guitar string really put it under stress. Something drops on it, bing, and it makes a very loud noise, a high pitch. If you loosen the tension, something drops on it, boom. It doesn't sound so much long, and it's got a lower pitch. If the guitar string has got no tension on it at all, it's totally stress-free. Things hit it, and it doesn't make any sound whatsoever. That is the secret of resilience. That when you learn how to relax, things in life affect you. Somebody says something nasty to you. Ajahn Brahm, when are you going to get a proper job? there's like viruses and bugs going around, and you catch them because you're so tense and tight. You know, I travel around the world a lot, and I go to so many airports, but I never get ill. This was a very dangerous disease you get when you go to so many airports, so many people, so many bugs floating around the air. The people who travel a lot, you know the illness they call by visiting so many airports? Terminal illness. I don't get terminal illness, amazing. But nevertheless, it's the lack of resilience, because people are too tight in their life. So what we do in meditation, we learn how to relax, for goodness sake, so that whatever we do, we're not sort of pulled into the future or dragged back into the past. We just enjoy this moment, totally relaxed and free. So the meditation which we usually teach here is learning how to first of all relax your body. You relax your body so much that most people go to sleep. But it doesn't matter, as long as you don't snore. If someone sitting next to you snores, just test their resilience. No. Usually a lot of people won't go to sleep, but at least they learn how to relax the body. So you can actually start to experience and feel your body and what it's like and where the tightness is, where the tensions are in the body. And if you can do that by being aware, mindful of your body, finding out where it's tight and tense, it's amazing how you can take any part of your body and just really relax it so that any healing can happen. But this was even when I was a student. We did these experiments in hypnosis. I remember seeing this hypnotist come along. He had this piece of wood with a 4-inch nail on the end, and he hypnotized one of these students into thinking. Okay, yeah. That's a burn off. It's just when I get very good, I really start smoking. And the heat comes out of my ears. And it's just, they're really on fire with the meditation. And anyway, just when you learn how to, actually that's, because it's fire season now anyway, so we've actually got our fire management plan at our monasteries, in case we have a bushfire. You know what our fire management plan is? No, all the monks, we stand in a line, face the fire, and 1, 2, 3, all together.
Does it work? Did it work?
Well, we haven't had a fire for years. So.
Wait a minute.
It's all metal there.
Yeah, okay, yeah, from the monks, yeah, people like me. So anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, learning how to relax. It's amazing what you can do with your body. You can relax it so much. Everything gets nice and still and very peaceful, and you can feel it healing. And I've done that several times. There's one time, because I was in Korea, South Korea, in the mountains, and it was really cold. It was minus 16 degrees outside, and I had to go out and do some little ceremony outside, and so I started getting a cold. All this really nasty liquid started coming down from my nose, which wouldn't be so bad except in half an hour's time I was going to have an interview on TV, nationwide, live. Have you ever seen anyone being interviewed and they still got a cold and things start dripping down their nose? Apparently, was it the Duke of whatever it is, we had an interview recently, but you know, imagine stuff coming down your nose when you're having an interview, that would be terrible. So what could I do? So what you do is, this is serious stuff, you learn how to meditate, get to really understand just the feelings in your nose and your sinuses, and really learn how to relax it. Relax it so much that it starts. It relaxes so much. But anyway, because that's so you learn how to be mindful so much that you can relax so much, the body sort of settles down and heals itself. It's amazing to be able to do this in difficult situations, so you can really relax deeply. And you do that by being aware of your body and just know how your body responds to your mind, to the attitudes. You get fear, you tense up, anxiety, you can feel what that's like. You get afraid, well, that's the same thing, isn't it? Really? You get angry, you know how to just relax the body and keep it really healthy. So that's a nice thing to do. And then you learn how to make your mind peaceful. Because the emotional world, it's amazing that people say they can't stop thinking. They're thinking about so much. But it's very easy to stop thinking and experience some silence. Because in those spaces between my words, you never knew when I was going to carry on speaking. So you were poised, waiting in this moment to be able to be peaceful. Is it the all clear? So, we just learn how to let go and be peaceful, not be afraid. But anyway, when we look at our mind, to be able to relax it so much. Should I tell some more weird stories? No, I shouldn't do this. Okay, go. I don't waste too much time. No, I can't. I've already started now. There was this, if it doesn't matter about any smoke or fires, because this was this monk, it's talked about in the old Buddhist scriptures. He was sitting meditation in the forest, so still and peaceful, that when these villagers, they saw this monk and they thought, oh my goodness, that monk is so peaceful, they can't see his chest rise and fall. They can't see him even breathing. He must be dead. So you know what they did? They thought, well, we can't leave a monk to be eaten by the jungle animals, so we have to cremate him. They were in the forest anyway. So what did they do? They got some wood. They put the monk on the top. They did some chant, whatever they knew. Probably the wrong chanting, it didn't really matter. And they lit the fire. And then the fire was burning merrily. Oh no, you're busy life, you can't wait all day for the monk to burn. So they went off and did their jobs, and then the following morning they were so impressed that in the morning that monk came with arms round. Even though they cremated him, he was still alive. And even his robes were all intact. So it's amazing, when you meditate, you're immune from fire. Do you believe that?
Don't try
the smoke. Well, I thought if there's a fire here, the smoke, don't have to worry. Just follow the instructions through the meditation, and when the fire passes, and you'll still be okay. At least test out who the good meditators are and who the not the good meditators are. But actually, that is a true story. Some of the stuff which I've seen in meditation stuff, we get. There are some really good meditating monks around. And I'll start it this line and let you know some really interesting stories. There's one one fellow is still alive. He's actually not even a monk, he's a layperson. He gets into very deep meditations in Sri Lanka. This fellow, I won't tell you who he is, someone of my followers over there. And he's a group, the head of the group is like a doctor. And this doctor decided to do an experiment on him. When he's in deep meditation, he just put some disinfectant on his arm, took out a scalpel, tried to cut him. The scalpel would just cut the skin, no matter how sharp it was. And the next time, so please don't do any meditation if you're going to have an operation. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you're going to be wasting the doctor's time. Anyway, so there's amazing things which happen in this meditation. But the most important thing is to learn how to make the mind peaceful and relax. So, to stop the thinking, what do you think about anyway? A lot of times we think about all sorts of old stuff which cannot be fixed up. It's gone, it's finished, you can't change it. We always think we can learn from the past. You don't learn from the past. You learn from the present. That is where the action is. And as far as the future is concerned, are you going to plan for the future? No. Because if you really care about the future, you should put your attention in the place where your future is being made, which is now. Now is the only time you can do anything for your future. So, we put all our attention in this wonderful present moment called now. This is where the action is. And if you make this moment nice and peaceful, stress-free and happy, you are doing the very best you can for a happy, healthy, successful future. By putting everything in the now. Especially when you're meditating. So that's all the time you have, just now. So, in this moment, no past, no future, just this present moment, just being here. And then what do you do with this moment? You relax and smile at the present moment. Because when you smile at the present moment, it's like the present moment smiles back at you. It becomes not just the present moment, it just changes slightly and becomes not the present moment, but the pleasant moment. So we call it pleasant moment awareness. So you enjoy this moment. It's just like you're free. Free from all the worries and concerns of the world. Do you ever want to get away from it all? Just have a nice holiday, stress-free? Well, congratulations, you've come to the right place. Club Med Armada, which is the nickname for this group. Club Med is a holiday camp where you can just relax, leave all your cares and worries behind, and just enjoy this moment with some good guidance so you can just be peaceful. So what do you want from this meditation? If you want something, it's called work. So put aside all the wants, put aside all of the any negativity, and just relax. Into this moment, relax your mind and smile, and that way you soon find you can be so peaceful and happy, even just sitting in smoky old Armadale Club Med. So simple. Okay, so anyway, whatever you haven't learnt or understood, I will be guiding the meditation, so no fear, Ajahn Brahm is here. And we can see what's going to happen. Is that okay? Okay. So now, half an hour meditation, not that long. So, closing your eyes. And remember, this is going on holiday. So at the customs. We're going to make sure you don't carry any prohibited items with you, such as the past and the future. They cannot be in your carry-on baggage. Check them in. So you can just be free. And you do begin by just becoming aware of this body, your vehicle, in which you travel so many years. Sometimes that we do abuse our body because we're not really aware, and we're not kind. So in order to arouse awareness of your body, you start by just, say, our legs, almost regarding your legs as a separate being, like a person in its own right. So you say, legs, how are you? If you actually ask a question of a part of your body, legs, how are you? And then listen, you get an answer. Do you need to be adjusted? Are you comfortable there? If you're sitting on a chair, do you want the feet to be moved away from the chair or tucked in more? The knees, you need to sort of spread them a little bit or tuck them in. So when you ask your body, you get some answers, and just be kind enough to listen to the advice of your body. It's much wiser than you are. And once you feel your legs are comfortable, then your butt, your buttocks, bottom, do they need to be adjusted? If you want to fit it, now is the time to fit it. Actually, to care for your butt so that it becomes comfortable. I said to some people who came to Bodhinyana Monastery today that if you ever go to these old monasteries, you find all the wooden floors are hardly polished. That's because people sit on the floor and they fidget, and every time they fidget, they polish the floor for us with their butts. So get your butt in a comfortable position, and then move the awareness up to your back. How are you back? Do you want to be leaned back against a chair or be more upright? You find the best position for your own back. It's not always the same every time. So what you're doing is you're being aware, mindful of the feelings and sensations in your own back, and being kind enough to adjust. And every time you move your body, adjust this position, it also means that you're getting feedback. Is that position more comfortable than before? Little by little, you learn by trial and error how to bring some comfort to the body. Just doing this physically, first of all, by getting into a comfortable physical position. From then, you go to your shoulders, learning how to relax your shoulders. So be aware, first of all, how do your shoulders feel? Are they tense? And how do I bring them to a deeper state of relaxation? One method is actually to scrunch up the shoulders, first of all. Scrunch them up as much as you can and then let go. And they relax to a deeper state of ease than when you started. And I can feel my shoulders nice and loose now. Then go down your arms to your hands. It doesn't really matter where your hands are situated, as long as they are comfortable. So if you want to adjust, move the hands, please do so until you find the best position. Then you go up to your neck. Again, people have pain in their neck. I don't mean their partner or their boss. I mean just neck pain. So in order to relieve that neck pain, make sure, number one, your head is well balanced on top of your neck. And if you have irritations in the throat because of maybe allergies, just see if you can change your attitude, the way you look at these things. Don't be afraid, but just be kind. Opening the door of your heart to those feelings. And see if that reduces the intensity of those sensations. After a while, when you stay with feelings in the body, sensations or irritations or even pains, you stay with them quietly, unafraid, learning from them. It's amazing how you can have power over these things. Power to relax, to ease, to bring healing. Never finished off the story about the person under hypnosis, but I'll tell it afterwards how the mind can do amazing things to the body. Then go to your face to relax the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. That's an important thing to learn how to relax, because any anxiety, any fear, any anger or negative emotions are written over your face by the specific way that those muscles are screwed up. When you relax those muscles around the eyes and the mouth and the forehead, you find the emotions also relax as well. I can feel those muscles just easing off. No anxiety, no fear. And then I imagine the whole body just as a unit now, all the parts coming together. Imagine just how relaxed my body feels. If you do have something in your body, it could be indigestion, it could be a cancer, it could be anything, any other illness, you can focus on that. Just allow the mind to zoom in or what is like an irritation or a pain or an imbalance. Sometimes you can't put a word to it. You know that there's something there. You focus in on it and give it kindness. When growing up in council flat in London, playing soccer in the streets, every time I went for a tackle and scraped the skin off my knees, I'd run to my mum and she would bend down and just a tiny bit of kindness kiss the wound better. And just that kindness took all the pain away and the wound always healed. Just through a kiss of kindness. I remember that if I got any tightness or tension anywhere in my body through some sort of illness or wound or disease, just go straight to it. Zoom in and give it kindness. So I overcome that cold in the mountains of Korea. When I give kindness to an irritating part of my own body, it relaxes. Because it relaxes, the body's own healing system can actually access the problem, can soothe it. My body's at peace again. And before I go to the next stage of the meditation, just learning how to calm the mind, I just enjoy a body which is so relaxed. It's like it's been in a hot bath, or had a massage, or just like it has been on holiday, just laying in a deck chair or recliner, so at ease. Or if those similes don't work for you, just like waking up in bed on a Sunday morning with nowhere to go, just cozy, relaxed, not wanting to get out from the covers. Some feelings I sort of have now. Deep bodily relaxation. And it's delightful. And I do indulge in that delight, because I know that when I am mindful of the delight, the happy feeling of a body which is relaxed, the relaxation goes deeper, and any healing has more time to do its job. Just enjoying as much relaxation as I can. Then I move on to my emotional world, the inside, the mind. And I begin by just noticing this thing I call the peace-o-meter, like a thermometer, speedometer. The peace-o-meter measures how peaceful or how agitated I am. I give it a number from 1 to 10 just to help. 1 means really peaceful, 10 means very agitated. So right now, give it a number, your peaceometer. How peaceful are you, or how agitated? Now, find out what you need to do to bring that number down. The reading of the peaceometer getting closer and closer to deep peace and relaxation. What you find is that by letting go of all the past, not being concerned about it for this time of rest and relaxation, not being concerned about the future, having confidence in the truth that now is where your future is being made, will allow you to stay in this present moment. As your mind becomes more and more at ease, more peaceful, just being here, with no pressure to achieve, to get something, and not being a prisoner of your past. You're totally free to be. And as the number, the reading on your peaceometer goes down, closer to being very peaceful, you'll find that too feels delightful. The joy, the peace, just being here. Sitting down in Club Med Armadale. Very often, people start to be aware of their breathing, the only thing which is moving. So if you wish, imagine the breath coming in and going out, just like you're sitting by the beach, watching the waves come in and go out, the breath coming in, like the waves coming up the beach, and the breath going out like the waves receding again. On a calm day, just tiny waves coming up, bringing oxygen and health and energy to your body, and the waves going out, carbon dioxide going out. Breathing in, peace. Breathing out, let go. With nothing to do in the whole world except enjoy the freedom, the pleasant moment. Just being, not judged, not afraid, just being here. Relaxing to the max. And try not to disturb this peace by thinking or giving things names or trying to work things out. All that thinking you can do afterwards. This is a time to experience, to listen to what's happening, rather than listening to the commentary on life that is thinking. Just relax the mind. So you just are, without having to give an opinion. As the thoughts become so calm, so soft, that you're hardly thinking at all, but you are fully aware. Just enjoying, feeling this moment. Just now, calm, relax. I'm now going to be quiet for about 5 or 6 minutes. Give you a chance to enjoy the silence and peace of this meditation. getting close now to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How peaceful is your mind? What's the reading on your peaceometer now? And how relaxed is your body? This is where we learn about meditation. We can be aware of the results of sitting quietly, just maybe watching our breath go in, go out. No past, no future, just being in this moment. Smiling at this moment. Soon we become skilled. We learn how to be at peace. Calm mind and a relaxed body. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's time to come out from your meditation. That was number 3. Very good. So, hopefully that was peaceful for you. I always enjoy it. But now is the time, still the same, just the questions and answers. Stump the monk time. So then, is there any questions in the box? Wow, okay. So we're free, I can go home. No? So what would you, any questions from the floor, what would you like me to, anything, I did that last week. Talk about anything, talk about nothing.
How do you deal with so many people being surrounded by a lot of people that bring negative energy to you?
Ah.
At the moment we're surrounded by, in the family, say, we have a couple of people who are very suicidal and they're angry against world, and
yeah.
Brings all this negative energy to you.
Yeah.
Trying to cope with that.
So, one way of doing that is to deliberately see if you can hang around some positive people for a little part of your day. That's why we have monasteries and nunneries and good places like the Club Med or Medel. Because it does make a difference to you. There's an old story of, this is from way back in the old Buddhist scriptures, of the elephant who lost his happiness. The elephant was a very beautiful elephant, very kind, always very helpful. Very good, that's only for visitors. And so the elephant suddenly became really bad tempered. Whenever anyone went past it, it squirted them with water. Mm-hmm. And always waited to poo when people were standing right behind it. You know, in Sri Lanka, where I've been to several times, sometimes, because I'm well regarded over there, sometimes you have a procession and you're right behind the elephant on procession. And I don't mind that. The worst thing about it is I'm always worried, not the elephant will poo, because you've seen the amount of poo which comes out of the back of an elephant? But even worse than that, if it's a let off wind. And you're right behind it, you'd faint. I thought they should give you a gas mask if you're walking behind the elephant for too long. But anyway, this is a very bad elephant. And so, that no one knew why it suddenly changed its character. So eventually they found out that in the middle of the night, early in the morning, just behind the elephant stall, that's where a group of bandits, bad people, would actually congregate in the evening, you know, to maybe to smoke drugs and to plan who they were going to rob the next day. And so because they were associated with these bad men were right behind the elephant stall, even though the elephant couldn't understand, you know, the speech of human beings, still picked up on the bad vibes. And that caused the elephant to become a bad person. And so all they did was to arrest those thieves and bad guys, and they get the monks and the nuns to go there in the evening just to meditate, to actually to do some chanting. And because you're around the monks and nuns, the elephant became a really good elephant again. So the idea of that is, if you have any people in your family or suicide, send them to the monastery, and then after a while become so peaceful and calm, they'll pick up on the monk's energy. Of course, that's a downside, because then the monks will pick up on the bad energy. No, we've got lots of strength there. But that's one thing, associating with good people. And that sort of actually brings you up. And also, when you look at the news, for goodness sake, don't just look at all the bad things that are happening in the world. Look at all the bad things happening in the world, and it just gets really depressed. So instead of looking at the bad things which happen in the world, instead you can get onto the sort of things like the BSWA podcasts and listen to all the silly jokes. Such as the silly joke for today is, want a silly joke?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Hope you haven't heard it from the websites anyway. About what's the last part of the human body which turns off when you die? No, not ears. I was from a Singaporean doctor, a specialist. I never realised this. The last part of your body which stops when you die is the pupils of your eye. It's only the pupils dilate.
Oh.
So if you listen to some stupid jokes, you know, you always groan. But it does actually make you happy. And so this is one of the reasons why that sometimes negativity and looking at all the bad stuff in this world, it does make you more negative. But also those people you have to live with, see if you can see something inside of them which is not negative. Then your relations, and I haven't always been like that. Every now and again they say something which is very beautiful and very kind. That's one of the reasons why I learned this when I used to go and teach in prisons. And some of the people in prisons, they're monsters, they're gorillas, they've done terrible stuff. But nevertheless, you can always look further past any bad stuff they did and see something else inside of them, some kindness, some goodness. I remember talking to one of these prisoners, and they must have done something good in your life. What good have you done in life? Nothing. They must have done something, and nothing. When you're outside, you have a cat, you had a cat. Did you ever feed the cat? You never fed the cat. So remember that, you fed the cat. You did something good and something kind. But when you get people to look at their kindness and to recognize they're not just hopeless, there's a beautiful part to them. And those people are negative in your family, they recognize there's actually more to them than the negativity. And they start to actually to grow in their goodness. Sometimes if that's all you see in your family members, just this negative person is really hurting, then that's all they see in themselves. They don't see anything else. So after a while, you find that people can change. It's wonderful that they can change. So all those times I went into prisons, I never ever saw a criminal. I never saw a murderer. I never saw a thief. All I ever saw was a person who committed a crime. A person who's done some terrible things to others. But they're much more than that. So if you can look at the person who's causing a lot of stress in your life, look past those actions, there's something more to them. Maybe they've forgotten that beautiful part of them, but it's there. The same with you, that sometimes your life may be very difficult, and you may even feel suicidal or very negative. Please look further than the bad part. The story I usually say is like, how big is your hand? My hand is so big I can't see any of you. All I can see in the whole universe is my hand. It's not my hand's fault, it's I've lost my perspective. I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm. Yeah, my hand hasn't diminished in its size. I can see my hand, I can see every one of you as well. So this is just perspective. So when you see negativity in people, it's just, you're just holding it too close. And you find there's more to them than just what is negative. There's more to your life than the negative moments of life. And sometimes you feel, why keep going on? You keep going on, and you find things do change. Even, I just wrote an email today, a few people are caught up in the, because I go to Hong Kong very often, and some of the images, I can remember some of those places I give many talks. And they say, well, what's going to happen there? So never ever give up hope. There's always some good in everybody. And it's like remembering those of you who ever brought up in places like UK or in the Northern Hemisphere. It gets to a time, it's always actually usually this time, November, December, when it's just, there's no lightness in the sky. It's all dark because the sun actually comes up. I remember going to school as a kid. You'd always go to school in the dark. You come home in the dark. Because, I mean, the sun would rise about 10 o'clock and it would set about 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And so everything was really dark, and even the sky, when the sun was up, it was all grey with clouds. And, you know, all the people, they'd always wear these overcoats. Oh, everything was grey. The bitumen was grey, the buildings were grey, people wore grey clothes, the sky was grey. You know, the tea they would drink, all grey. Everything was grey. And it was really depressing. But I always remembered that just there was, you go out into the parks or the countryside, and again, there was no leaves on the trees. There was no birds in the sky, they were all hibernating, sleeping through the winter. Nothing was alive. It was just so sort of dreary and depressing. But you knew, because you'd seen it happen year after year, that underneath the ground there was all these seeds, all this life, just waiting just for the warmth to come, to burst forth into life. All those little animals, the birds and the squirrels, and they were just waiting. And they're curled up, hibernating, sleeping. And just when the first warmth come, they'll all be out into the air. It's just a wonderful time of the year, the spring. And everything just blossomed. And the whole place, which was so grey and dead, suddenly came to life. And it was like almost like a message of, don't ever have despair. Because just wait, hang on there, it does pass. When it does pass, wow, it's amazing. When it does pass, always remember that however dark it gets in life, there's always a sun that's just waiting to rise. It always passes. When it does pass, it's the dark times actually make you appreciate the summertime of your life. If it was always summertime, you just take it for granted. That's one of the reasons why that when things go wrong, I always remember it's not going to last, it can't last. It never does last. And things change. When they do, that's what you appreciate. You can't always have it just a beautiful time. There was the story I often tell about meditation. Sometimes you press the buttons right and your meditation is really beautiful. And then sometimes you come here and you can't meditate for your life. You say, what's going on? Why can't I always just hit the spot in meditation? And the simile is of like the migrant, the refugee, who came to Australia. He was a doctor in his home country. He was a very well-educated man, but his qualifications weren't recognised here. So he had to get whatever job he could. He got a job on a building site as a labourer. And he was, you know, he was fit and young. He worked very hard. He was dead. There you go. Oops. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. He was fit, worked very hard. But when he got home on Monday, his wife said, "How much did you make today?" He said, "Nothing. I worked really hard, but I didn't get any pay at all." Went Tuesday, Wednesday, the same. Thursday, give it one more day. Worked really, really hard on Thursday, never got a cent. He said, I'm not going to go to work again. People in Australia, they exploit migrants. Just because I come from a foreign country doesn't mean they can't treat me like this. This is rotten. But his wife sent him to work on a Friday. And on a Friday, he only worked half a day and he got his big pay packet. When he went home, he said, "I finally worked out how things are in Australia. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Fridays." Of course. You know, you can't just have the happiness without earning it. And sometimes you have to go through the dark days before you get the beautiful days. So don't worry, tell your friends that they may be miserable today, but you know, the check's in the mail. And it does eventually come. So that's why you don't get so depressed. And always, you know, it's like, you know, if you're with lots of depressed people, it just gets really awful. So just, you know, get out and go with real people.
Yeah, because it's the negativity that, even though we're probably people,
it's
when you're surrounded by that,
it
brings you down.
Yeah, it just, you get suffocated. So get out there and see some beautiful people, some kind people. And after a while, your kindness and your bubbliness, that will actually bring them out of their negativity. They can't resist it after a while. So that's how you bring other people out. And yeah, sometimes life is pretty difficult and negativity. Sometimes, you know, you're not really appreciated all the hard work. I've been coming down, how long have I been coming to this place, Rachel?
Over 30 years.
30 years, and it's still. Just, I don't have long service leave. I don't need appreciation, I just enjoy what I'm doing. Well, I can't retire, that's a difficult thing, it's really awful not being able to retire. I did some years ago, I was only a couple of years ago, I think, I decided to get, I'm 68 now, coming on to 69, I decided to get my Commonwealth seniors card. Why not? You know, I don't have a pension, never will do, because you know, don't have any money as a monk, but I decided, why not? So I went over to the Centrelink in Armidale, because you can't do it online. You have to prove who you are, because you know, you're a identity fraud. So they fronted up there and said, can you prove who you are? I said, I've been a monk, I've been trying to find that out for 45 years. And you know, they never thought it was funny. They got no sense of humour in Centrelink, have you ever been there? Anyway, there's no one working with Centrelink, is there? I shall do it future. But anyway, so they said, we need some ID, what have you got? So, you know, I had a passport. So that's not enough. What about your driver's license? I don't have a driver's license as a monk. Okay, what about your credit card? No, I haven't got one of those. What about your bank statement? No, don't have any bank accounts. What about, actually, no, what oh, that's right, your rental agreement. I don't pay any rent in the monastery, I'm the boss there. Well, what about the ownership of it? No, that's owned by the Buddhist Society of West Australia. I don't have a sort of... I said, well, what they asked for next? This is absolutely true. We can't make these funny stories up. I know I do sometimes, but this is true. They said, what about your marriage license certificate? I'm not married, I haven't got one of those either. And they asked all these things, which, being a monk, you don't have. So in the end, they said, well, you don't exist. The Buddha was right.
Hey, fun as a monk sometimes, isn't it?
You just don't fit in. I like not fitting in. Even when I went over to England recently to visit and do some talks for the nuns over there, and also to have visited my brother. It just so happened that the day I went to go and see him was on October the 31st.
Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween, so you got it right. So, you know, from there I got onto the tube train to go into London to give the next thing on the talk. All these people started coming on the train dressed as vampires and witches and zombies. So, you know, I like to go on public transport, and just for once I didn't feel I was the odd man out. It was only the people who came in with, you know, proper clothes on, like suits, and they were the weirdos. But unfortunately, I don't think my dress was actually scary enough, so I didn't get given any candies. Not that I need any more sugar in my system. It's always good fun being about not fitting in. So anyway, so that was very nice about just having fun in life, no matter what people say to you. What about you? So just and associate with kind, good people. And even this one person told me something that was really wonderful. He said, how many people you go to work, you expect other people to make you happy? So why don't you go to work and just make a resolution? I'm going to make one person happy today in my work. Find out maybe a boss or a colleague or someone who works for you, you know what they like, and just give it to them. You know, if it's a cup of coffee, you know, you see what they like, and you're their boss, doesn't matter, you can figure out what they like and say, hey, here's a cup of coffee for you today. It is something a bit different, just to make life a bit more happy for people. And that's very nice for people to do that. So, don't expect other people to make you happy, you go out there and make others happy. Wonderful thing to do. So, how did that go? Is that some good advice? Perfect. Okay, I'll try and do better next time. sometimes if I'm only here for an hour and a half, and half an hour is meditation. But in my life, sometimes I've been writing some letters to my relations I didn't get to see, because it's getting to the Christmas time now. And usually catch up with everybody. And I was just writing this, the highlights of my trip over to UK recently. The biggest highlight was just walking through Paddington Station. It's a big station, very busy, and just going to catch a train to Oxford to give some talks in Oxford. And just as I was minding my own business, just walking there, this young woman came up to me. Almost like running up to me. She was like an Afro-English. And she said, you're the YouTube monk. That's my name now, the YouTube monk. And then I said, yeah, that's me. And she said that she was going through a very difficult separation. And sometimes that's just devastating for a person. There's so many things which just knock you. Not physically, they can't see the hurt physically, but they can see, you know, just how much pain you have inside of you. And she said she was suicidal. And she was really depressed, and no one could really help her. And then she just chanced for one of my YouTube videos. And she came up to me, the last person she ever expected to see in Paddington Station. Because she knew I was from Australia. And what the hell are you doing here? And but the joy, the excitement on her face was just beautiful. So thank you so much. And those sorts of things make life just so gorgeous. Seeing the surprise and the delight. So she could actually say thank you and say how she'd given those talks to so many other people. All freely available. And that's the sort of thing where you can sometimes should I share that with other people? Is that just what Dennis keeps on saying, skiting, blowing your own trumpet? But no, it's actually sharing goodness and kindness, and just how it just spreads in this world, and how just these little moments of fun and happiness just make life worthwhile. Also fun as well, because not this time, the last time I was over there, that just, I like going on the tube trains, because sometimes it doesn't matter if you're a senior famous monk, you just, you know, find out what other people are thinking. I just sat there one day, and I just go from one place to another, and this girl came up to me, this lady, she said, "Oh, you're a Buddhist monk?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." And she just wanted to, you know, have a chat about that religion. We had a chance actually to go close. So we had a chat for a few stations, and then she was asking me about reincarnation. You know, that's one of the things which Buddhists often believe in. And she said, "You know, well, what actually is it?" And so I told the story, because it happened just a month before over in Jhana Grove, you know, our meditation center next to a monastery in Serpentine, where this Italian man, he was on a retreat and he got all these weird dreams at night. And he came up to me and he said, the first night he dreamt, very clear dream, that he was a strand of spaghetti. That's really weird. A strand of spaghetti. And the second night, he dreamt he was a piece of macaroni. And when he came up to me, I've never heard that one before, spaghetti and macaroni. I just got it straight away. He's an Italian. He was recollecting his past lives. And this was a wonderful moment, because not only she started laughing, but if you've ever been in the underground carriages in London, no one ever makes eye contact with them. They never do. No. They're looking at their newspapers or they're looking at their iPhones. But then they were all listening for the punchline. And as soon as I delivered it, they all looked up at my iPhones. They groaned, they laughed. They had a moment of actually just learning a bit about Buddhism. I think I converted a lot of people. Why does it have to be all miserable then? Those are some sort of highlights of what happens when you enjoy yourself. So, what else have we got?
We're going to come back to the hypnosis.
Oh, the hypnosis, yeah. This is actually, it was strange, but because the students, you know, we'd do anything, just, you know, we had a lot of fun and a lot of courage to explore. So he, this hypnotist, he had a stick with a 4-inch nail on it, and then he put his young student under hypnosis and said, "This nail is red hot." And he touched the nail on the student's skin. It was just room temperature, but because he was hypnotized into believing it was red hot, he screamed in pain. It didn't burn him, of course, because it was only just a nail at room temperature. So I thought, but then a blister came up on his skin. It was burnt. It was a trauma, you know, a physical trauma on his skin. For no reason at all, except that he believed it was red hot. You can see that. And that really sort of shook me. How can, if you can believe it, under hypnosis, could you actually have that happen? And of course, then you started sort of thinking, well, if you can create a burn, you know, from just a 4-inch nail at room temperature, maybe you can uncreate one. Maybe that you can diminish a tumor, heal a wound. Get rid of some bugs in your tummy. Maybe that we don't use the power of our mind enough to actually to heal things. And of course, that was even just then. And in my life as a monk, you've seen some amazing things happen. Oh, which one should I choose out of this whole list of stories? This fellow came to one of my retreats. This was when we had a retreat centre. Oh, we used a retreat centre in North Perth. And you know North Perth is just right next to Northbridge. So when this fellow came wearing a rubber face mask, I thought, you know, this is not this, you know, this is a meditation retreat centre, it's not a weirdo's place. And he said, no, I'm wearing this rubber face mask because I have psoriasis. And it's the worst case of psoriasis I've ever seen. It was disgusting. He said he wore this face mask to stop him scratching the skin off his face. And he opened his shirt up to see this rash covering all of his torso. He lifted up his trousers, fortunately he didn't take them off, just to show me just all the rash all over his body. He said, every inch of my body has this psoriasis on it. And he said, it's just torture. And he could see it, and he could understand you had little rashes on you sometimes. And it was all over his body. And he said he could hardly sleep. You know, he could, nothing was working. Anything which the doctor or the psychiatrist gave him was just not working at all. So he just decided to try meditation as the last throw of the dice. And he came up and said, look, if I don't stay for your meditation or for any talk, it's nothing to do with you. It's just, you know, I'm just totally restless because of this scratchiness which I have to endure 24/7. And I was, of course, I only tell the stories where it works. Well, those are great ones because it did work for him. At the end of his retreat, I'll always remember him, he had his face mask off, his skin was clear. And with great pride, he's the only person I've ever seen just boast by opening up his shirt and to show his chest. With a great grin on his face, see, it's all gone. And he lifted up his trousers and there was a band around his ankle still. Maybe an inch wide, so that's all that's left. That's all that's left. For some people, that would be just very irritating, but for me, it's just nothing. Thank you so much. And when you see stuff like that, again, it really makes this meditation incredibly powerful. Now, you can take control of, you know, some of your treatments, and you actually make a difference, you know, to what's happening. And, you know, there's a lot more, you know, just in a little half an hour meditation here, but little by little it's incredible what people can do to heal themselves and actually to get rid of some of the negativities, emotional negativities of our life and the physical problems in our body. And that's what, you know, sometimes really interests me. It's not just for a bit of peace and calm. It's much more powerful than that. It could do huge amounts of help for human beings. So a lot of work to be done there, but you know, I've seen in my life so often that happens. I've seen in my own body these things happen, and amazing just what we can do. So never give up. Because if you give up and you believe it's going to happen, then it does. Please. I just one more little anecdote. Every year, I want my anecdote, and then, is that okay to go with the time of it? One matter. But every year for the past, I think, 27, 28 years, I've been going to teach at the, it used to be the Cancer Support Association, then the Cancer Wellness Association, now they're called Solaris, Cancer Care, whatever, I don't mind what it's called, but I've been going there for so many years, and I wondered why they keep inviting me there, and one of the reasons was that the first year I went there was, you know, a woman who had breast cancer. And, you know, it was a very unpleasant treatment, but she, you know, managed to get into remission because of her cancer. And, but that wasn't the end of it. She was so anxious, you know, what would happen if it came back. And I didn't know the full story because it was my first time there. But then after my little talk, she put up her hand for questions. And she said, I've just had a very long battle, successful fortunately with breast cancer. I'm so worried what would happen if it came back. And just cutting to the heart of it, I said, well, have you considered what would happen if it didn't come back? a simple thing like that. But she got it. And she never thought that before. She was always thinking, it's going to come back, it's going to come back. If she'd carried on thinking like that, of course, the stress and the worry would make it more probable it came back. But if she got it straight away, that's why it never came back. But she comes back every time I go there for the last 26, 27 years. That's a beautiful little story. And it was just, you know, sometimes those one-liners don't work. But in that case, it was straight to her. I said, oh yeah, what happens if it doesn't come back? And it didn't. So sometimes, know the way your mind works. Sometimes it's the right time, the right place. Somebody says something, oh yeah, and then you're free. Attitude is important. Okay, well, there we go. Very good. Okay, so have a good week. See you next time.
Thank you.
You too.